Welcome to Catalytic Leadership, the podcast designed to help leaders intentionally grow and thrive. Here is your host, author, and leadership and executive coach, Dr. William Attaway.
Hey, it's William, and welcome to today's episode of the Catalytic Leadership Podcast. Each week, we tackle a topic related to the field of leadership. My goal is to ensure that you have actionable steps you can take from each episode to grow in your own leadership. Growth doesn't just happen. My goal is to help you become intentional about it. Each week, we spotlight leaders from a variety of fields, organizations, and locations. And my goal is for you to see that leaders can be catalytic no matter where they are or what they lead. I draw inspiration from the stories and journeys of these leaders, and I hear from many of you that you do too. Let's jump into today's interview. I'm so excited today to have Robert Brill on the podcast. Robert's the CEO of Brill Media, a media buying agency that focuses on precision advertising for business growth. The company's been honored 10 times across Inc. 5000 and Financial Times 500. Robert's a member of the Forbes Business Council and Fast Company Executive Board, where he writes about improving user experience, business growth strategies, data targeting, local advertising, and white label media buying. Additionally, he speaks about advertising, marketing, AI, and entrepreneurship to business owners across the country. Robert's a proud father, husband, dog father, Dodgers fan, and newly minted Inter Miami fan. Robert, I'm so glad you're on the show. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me, William. I really appreciate it.
I would love for you to share some of your story with our listeners, Robert, particularly around your journey and your development as a leader. How did you get started?
Yeah, I mean, I got started about a year before I graduated school. I was interning for Universal Music, and then 2 weeks out of college, I got a job at Universal McCann, which is one of the largest ad agencies in the world, working on Sony Pictures. I knew nothing about nothing. Couldn't tell the difference between my face and my elbow. So that was the early stages of me becoming a leader, which was figuring out what advertising actually is and whatnot. By 2011, I had worked with several agencies and created or was part of a group that created a subsidiary company for the agency I was working for. And then in 2013, I started my my own agency, Brill Media. And I think, you know, leadership is really interesting because it takes so many forms, and so many different situations require different types of leadership. And I can't say I'm a great leader. I can say that I definitely understand what leadership is. I don't know if I actually execute on it well every day, but I have learned that I can find the right people to be leaders in my organization. And I think that's a part of leadership, building teams. I think for me, leadership is about understanding the nuances of a situation, a business situation. And sometimes I get it right, sometimes I get it wrong. And, you know, over the course of hiring people inside Brill Media, I've definitely learned some lessons. Like for example, my very first hire, I probably should have hired earlier, my first full-time hire. And then when we needed to scale from a 2.5-person team to a 7-person team, I probably should have done that earlier, and it cost me some business and a lot of heartache. So I think what I've learned is that leadership requires constant tending to. Yeah. And if you take your eye off the ball, you're going to lose some things. And that's, you know, I'm still a practitioner of advertising. So like the thing I know how to do is grow businesses. So there's like that work, there's the leadership work, there's the money and finance and cash flow and invoicing work. I think it's tough to be able to focus on all things. And when you focus on different things, some things are going to be missed.
You know, I think that's so insightful, Robert. I think so many people start their own business because they're really good at providing a product or a service. And then as they grow, and begin to have to hire other people to help them with fulfillment, they all of a sudden realize that they're a leader.
Yeah.
And that's a different thing than being good at providing a product or a service. Now you've got other people who are looking at you, expecting you to have the right answers.
Which I think in a lot of cases, I do have the right answers. The question is, in what? Like I can help. Like, I understand the theory of digital advertising and like various components of the advertising landscape. I understand that. So I have the answers there, but then leadership of when do we tell people certain things? How do we express good news and bad news? How do we and when do we promote people? You know, there are situations in our business where people I specifically didn't want people to take certain leadership positions because I just knew from their nature and what they had expressed to me, not like I have any great insight into them, but from what they expressed to me, that taking on certain types of leadership and certain types of responsibility will overwhelm them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that happened inside my org, and that person left because it did exactly what I thought it would do. It overwhelmed them, and they pulled through. They did a good job, but they're like, I'm maxed out. I'm drained. I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm going to exit the organization. It's like, yeah, but then they also got upset that I didn't think of them for this one like situational leadership role. And I was like, yeah, I didn't want you to have that because I knew it would drain you. Mm. So, you know, I think the question of leadership is when do you put your foot down on something? How strongly do you believe in something, and how hard will you fight to implement that belief? Mm. Which I think is interesting.
It is. And learning when to trust your gut, you know, when to say, you know, I don't feel right about it. I feel like that's gonna overwhelm. That's not gonna end well. When do you trust that intuition? And when do you say, well, let's try it?
You know, I have different, there's like different avatars inside my head. There's the avatar of me as an employee. There's the avatar of me responding. So me as an employee, which is closely connected to me responding to the bosses I've had in other businesses.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best bosses I had was when I worked at Universal McCann, a guy named Elias Plishner. He's now, like head of marketing at Sony Pictures, really smart man. And really, I think the reason I love advertising so much is because I happened to get hired in his team, and it was such a great team. So I think about all the things I loved about working for him just as a very junior person starting out after college. Then I think about, you know, the bosses I've had when I was a leader and had people that reporting to me, and I had to make financial decisions and whatnot. So I think about all the, I try to understand what past experiences can I draw on to help give me different perspectives that might help inform the current situation. So if I'm going to, you know, am I pushing the team too hard? I might. Are they expressing dissatisfaction with the workload? Okay. That's interesting. But am I pushing the team so hard, harder than I've been pushed? You know, that's another balancing point. What would other agencies do? What do I want my agency to be like? So there's this constant like calibration for me about what I should or should not be doing. What do the finances say? What's good for the overall growth of the business? What's good for, you know, one of our KPIs is employee satisfaction. Are people happy? Do they like working at Brill Media?
Yeah.
Are they getting something that maybe they wouldn't be able to get elsewhere? So there's a constant calibration for me on the decisions I make, and I just have to let one of those avatars win. Mm-hmm. I either let the business owner money avatar win, I let the middle management employee avatar win, I let the very junior, you know, what did I like as a very junior person, and what, how can I give those things to the team? And so, you know, I try to have a, you know, they talk about, you know, in politics, like the cabinet or the kitchen cabinet or the person, the group of people that help define decisions and how to make decisions. I try to have that kitchen cabinet of different elements of me in my head. I also talk to like my wife, who's a big sort of advisor, important advisor to the business. But yeah, I'm realizing I have all these different avatars. Like, I never even thought about it like that. But yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I've never heard anybody describe it that way, as having these different avatars in their mind that they use and kind of compete with one another to see which one are you gonna focus on for this particular person or this particular decision.
Yep.
That's a unique perspective.
I think, you know, I don't want to be so myopic. You know, I see entrepreneurs and business owners and you know, I there's a certain feel I get from people who are tech founders and people who are like community leaders. Like, community leaders have a different, I'm in Los Angeles, right? So we talk about vibes.
Yeah, right.
Energy, you know? Yeah. So it's like you get a different vibe from a different set of vibes from the tech founder. Again, in general, it's a stereotype. No one person fits into the exact stereotype, but generally, right? So you have the community leaders, they feel different. The tech founders feel different. The local business owner feels different. So I'm trying to decide I don't want to just be Robert Brill in 2023 making decisions off of 2023, like good things and bad things. Like, yes. I don't want that to be the case. I want Robert Brill of 2010 and 2003 and all the different parts of me that I've been and experienced. I want to learn, draw from those experiences as if they were just pages in a book that I can reread again and re-experience so that I can make better decisions and step into the shoes of the person whose decisions are being affected, lives are being affected by the decisions I make. And they can be small decisions like, hey, I need you to take over this account. Or they can be, you know, bigger life-changing decisions like, we're going to hire, not like hiring from us changes your life, but it affects your professional life. It affects where you spend your time. So it's, in a very minor way, a life-changing decision, right? Yeah. Who do we hire? Who do we not hire? How do we make financial decisions for the business? So I one of the things I talk about a lot is magnitude of responsibility. And it's a concept I really just started thinking about over the last 6 to 12 months, which is, you know, the things that we're doing, you know, we're not saving lives. We're not curing cancer, all those things. Right. But, you know, there's urgency, there's value, there's money, there's lifestyle, there's big decision, big impacts to the work that we do. And so I want all of us in all of our situations to rise to the magnitude of responsibility that we have, whatever it is, whatever the responsibility is, there's a magnitude to it. And let's rise to the magnitude of that responsibility. So then I say, okay, well, I want to pay reverence to how important this decision is, whether it's a big decision or a small decision. It needs to be a thoughtful decision. It can't be a flip decision or flippant. It's going to impact people and lives. So let's be thoughtful about it.
You know, you asked so many great questions just then, and I think that's so important because you're never going to get to the right answers unless you ask the right questions. And I think that's one thing that's a gift that you have, in that you're asking yourself the right questions that are going to take you where you want to go from where you are. I'm curious. I mean, you know, Brill Media is not brand new. This is not a year or two old. Like, you have seen a lot of growth in this season. Like, what would you say is the root of your growth at Brill?
I mean, number one, we have clients who trust us. So in no particular order, it's like chicken or the egg, you know.
Sure.
We have clients who trust us. We do good work for our clients. Our clients are growing.
Yeah.
We have a team of people who are passionate about our business. When I say passionate, I mean they're loyal. They do good work. They care. They're smart. They're thoughtful. They go above and beyond for their clients. They work very hard. Not because they have to. They really don't. I mean, you know. They don't have to. They rise to the magnitude of responsibility. They understand the value and importance of working with urgency and being able to prioritize the important things and put on the back burner, even if it's just for an hour or a day or a week, you know, some of the things that are lower priority. So just even having the wherewithal to do that is important. And I think, you know, we have a really fantastic chief operating officer who, you know, adds to the team what I don't have. You know, she's really good at, sounds so like basic. She's really good at empathy.
Yeah, no.
And absolutely. Creating culture, you know, and I'm just, you know, I work so much. Our whole team does, but like, I'm not that carry touchy feely type of boss. I'm like, all right, what have we accomplished today? What did we produce? Are clients happy? Like that's what I care about. Yeah. And our COO is like, how's the team? How are you feeling?
Yeah.
Like, are you okay? Which the team needs, because yes. I will unfortunately drive people into the ground if it's just me leading, because I'm hard on myself. Like that's basically more of a reflection of my inner thought process of how hard I am on myself.
Yeah.
Like I just got to work hard and do better. You know, and people are like, no, but I tell me I'm doing a good job. Am I doing a good job? You're doing a good job. You know, like, so you, it's like we need both sides of that equation in the business. You need the heart person and you need the like numbers and math person. And so we make a good team.
I think that's wise in your leadership to recognize that. I think so often a business leader will have a blind spot here. Yeah. And they will not recognize that hole in the business. And, you know, whether they're more relationally focused or whether they're more task focused and performance focused, you know, both matter. Like you have to have both. And nobody has it all. We all lean one way or the other. And the fact that you have brought in a COO specifically to address that gap, I think is an example of great leadership that everybody listening needs to pay attention to.
I wish I could say I planned it that way. I mean, this woman, she ascended in our organization. She started as an account manager when she was like our fourth or fifth hire, somewhere around there. And she's aggressive, which I really appreciate. And she has the experience to understand. I mean, she's been in the business like 22 years, something like that. She's aggressive. And, you know, her and I are growing together. She's not the same person she was when I hired her in 2018. And I'm not the same person I was when I hired her in 2018. Like we've both grown and have, through a series of shared experiences, have created a more well-tuned business.
I love that. I want to come back to that in just a minute. But before I do that, though, I want to focus in on something that I think is a struggle for a lot of people listening. A lot of the folks listening are entrepreneurs, they're founders, they're business leaders. And when you start your own business, one of the challenges is you don't have the resources to do everything you want to do, right? You're starting from the beginning. And some of the folks listening are in that season. And as they grow, they begin to have more resources, but you still have to prioritize.
Yeah.
When comes the point? How does a local business or a small business begin to think about scaling their growth through advertising? Because that's a challenge for some. And they really wonder, like, where's that line? When does that point come?
There's a few things. I mean, I think from the touchy-feely perspective, you'll know. And the way you'll know is you'll have the money to do it. The money is a big one for me, right? That's sort of like the scorecard.
Yeah.
Right? Like with more money, you can take on bigger challenges.
Yeah.
And if spending $1,500 a month hurts you, then you're probably not ready. You never want to be, you know, just like with any purchase, like I could buy a $100,000 car, but number one, I don't like cars that much. So I'm happy with whatever the heck my wife wants. Like, she's like, why don't you get a Tesla? I'm like, I don't care. It's not me.
Yeah.
Like we drove a Range Rover. I was like, that's cool, but we know it breaks down a lot and it would be weird in our neighborhood. Like I wouldn't feel comfortable driving a Range Rover in our neighborhood. I feel like it would get broken into. Not that it's a bad neighborhood. It's just, you know, it would just stand out.
It'd stand out. Yeah.
And I'm like, And also, I'd be really upset if that thing got broken into. Right. It's like, so it's like, you know, I don't want to spend the money on something that I'd be so concerned about.
Yes.
You know, like you have to be, like I heard something once that said, like, you have to be able to buy the thing three times. And if you can buy it three times, like you could, if you can spend three times the amount of money and feel okay with it, then you're good.
Wow. That's a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. Like I have a pen. I have a really fancy pen. And this is a nice purchase, but it's, you know, a fancy pen. But I could buy it if I lost it or something. And so that's my speed. Mm. You know? So but that's just me. So I think the first thing is, if you're worried about, if you're like, you know, this $15 has to work or I'm out of business,
right?
Where it's $1,500 or $15,000 or $150,000 or $15 million, whatever the number is, if you feel uncomfortable spending it because it has to work, that then you probably shouldn't be spending it. Mm. More tactically, you know, I think, and this is related to both advertising and just like running your business. Like I would have, very early on, I fantasized. I was like, man, it'd be great if I had someone to do the work for me, if I had media buyers I could hire. But I wasn't at that point because I didn't feel comfortable spending the money on the people. Because I was uncomfortable that it felt too tight for me, so I did the work myself. So that's with every part of your business. Like, should you scale? I don't know. It depends. Are people buying your product and service without the scale? Yeah. Like, do you talk to people and people like it? Yeah. Do you do no marketing and you have some traction? The worst thing you can do is like go all in on something and it's the wrong idea.
Mm.
So the first step is, this all comes down to this idea of product market fit.
Yeah.
Do you have something that people want? Whether it's another, I mean, this perfectly applies to my agency. You know, an example of that would be in advertising, right? You have this idea of algorithmically driven advertising, and in the marketplace, for people who work in it, it's called programmatic advertising. Programmatic. Instead of data and automation, there's all these cool tools that, you know, we have access to because we know what it is and we know how to make it work, like the Trade Desk and Vistar and Simplify, these really important tools. But guess who doesn't care about any of these tools, much less even know what the word programmatic means? The guy I'm selling advertising to.
That's exactly right.
So it took me a while because I was like, man, I'm so smart. Look at this. Look at this great thing you're getting by just the fact that I'm in your presence. I'm talking to you about programmatic. And the restaurant owner is like, I don't know. Are you going to get me more people to buy food from me? Right. I don't care what programmatic is.
That's right.
You know, so it's like, that's an example of getting product market fit. If I would have spent lots of money and hired a bunch of people to talk about programmatic, it would have been a massive failure and a massive waste of money because people don't want programmatic. They want sales.
Mm-hmm.
It's obvious, you know? So the one thing I learned is, but it took me like a year and a half to figure that out. So the one thing I learned was like, talk to people with language that they can understand, because again, obvious, people aren't going to buy stuff when they don't know what you're talking about,
yeah.
You know? So that's an example of product market fit. I wasn't able to sell effectively or scale up my business by talking about things that people weren't interested in. So in the evolution of a business, especially in the early stages, which could take months or years, you really need to think about, even if I don't have advertising, even if I can't expand my message, are people buying from me? And when you get to the point where you feel comfortable that you know what to say and what to do to get people to buy from you,
yeah,
that's when you can consider marketing and advertising. And frankly, you know, it's always a decision about when you start advertising. First step, you have to have product market fit. Second step is, advertising is really, so it's always the equation of, do you have time or do you have money? Which do you have more of?
Yeah.
Is it, if you have time but no money, then do social marketing, right? Hire someone for a little bit of money or do it yourself and post content and get the reaction there. The upside, it's less expensive. Practically speaking, it's less expensive or free. The downside is you can't control how many people see your content, and you can't control who sees your content. So as a result, it's hard to sort of like scale. It doesn't have, there's this idea of predictable, repeatable, and scalable. You don't have that.
Yeah.
in social marketing, but you do have that in advertising. The benefit of advertising, even at an early stage, is you can understand very quickly. So if you have more, if it's more viable to spend money than to spend time, right? Yeah. You can spend 6 to 12 months doing social marketing, or you can spend a month doing advertising and learn some stuff quickly. With advertising, you have the ability to do, you know, we have a creative testing framework that we deploy for our clients. And one of the things is understanding which products and services, which offers, which discounts, even which audiences resonate for your business. And that's a way of expediting a year or more of learnings into like multiple 3 to 4 week cycles. So the core idea is, and you know, a lot of our clients are actually other agencies. So we do this for other agencies, whether it's creative firms or marketing firms or social media firms. So basically what we do is we take 5 ads on Meta. We disassemble them into their constituent parts. So 5 headlines, 5 primary texts, or 5 images or video. So you have 15 total assets that can be grouped together in different ways. And you have 125 different variations, 5 times 5 times 5. What we do is within about a 2-day period, we go from 125 variations down to 20 using control variable testing. And then in about another 2 weeks, we do dynamic creative testing, so we can take those 20 ad combinations and push it down to the 1. So within 3 to 4 weeks, you will go from 125 possible ad variations down to the 1 variation that is the best out of that group. And so what you do is you cycle, again, this is for early market companies that are trying to figure out who they are and what customers want from them. You can cycle through different products, services, discounts, messages, positive messages or negative messages. And what you have the ability to do is understand which of those messages actually get people to spend money with you with advertising, with very low ad spend. So you're talking about, I don't know, $1,500 a month, something like that. And you can do it for less, actually. So an early market company that's trying to figure out who they are and what the value proposition is for their customer and what words and language to use to get them to buy. This is a really concise framework to expedite 6 to 12 to 18 months of learning doing social media and compile that into just a few 3 or 4 week sprints, basically.
That's fascinating, Robert. Yeah. I mean, absolutely fascinating. There's so much of a science this is. And I can't imagine that a lot of people understand how important it is to do that kind of testing, experimentation, in order to get what you want. You know, my dad started an advertising agency back in the early 70s.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
So this is very traditional, right?
Yeah.
And he just retired a number of years ago now. It ran almost 50 years, that agency.
Incredible.
But it was very traditional, right? I mean, you're talking newspaper, magazine, television, radio, right? It was all that. There has been such a shift in the market, in the advertising world over that span of time.
Yeah.
You know, and in the digital marketing world, I think there's so many things people get wrong. They throw a lot of spaghetti at the wall, but they don't understand how to analyze it in the way you just said. I imagine that's one reason a lot of clients come to Brill.
You know, it's, yeah. I mean, look, the truth is clients come to Brill because of referrals and relationships, but they stay with Brill because of stuff like that.
Brilliant.
Right? Like clients stay with us. You know, the crazy part is we have 48-hour out clauses. Like literally we have clients who stay with us for years and they're like, you know, they could literally cancel everything in 48 hours.
Wow.
We want to make it easy, right? Like I don't want people forced to work with us. I want people to work. And, you know, we might change that in the future. I don't know. Maybe it's like better business to have, you know, longer term contract, which I think it is actually. like I should look into that. But, you know, people come to us off of relationships and referrals. People who I've worked with in various ways come to us. And we certainly do lead generation on Meta, on LinkedIn, Google search ads, display advertising, even Twitter and Reddit ads. We run ads. Yeah, but they stay with us. Clients stay with us because of the thinking and the doing. Yeah. And the doing, you know, this is like, how do you, like, the thing that I think about a lot is how do you determine whether an agency is good? And so there's a few key factors. Number one is performance. You've got to drive performance. You need sales, you need leads.
Yep.
The bank account has to grow, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
You need urgency. Like, your business, time is money. Like, I know it sounds like we're not curing cancer, but to the entrepreneur whose bank account it is, like, this is very life-changing and important. And being an entrepreneur is a life-changing, visceral experience, and everything is magnified. Mm-hmm. So urgency is important. Acting on that urgency is important. Then you need strategy. Strategy is a very big part of this, because strategy is a protection against making bad decisions. It's your navigation plan. The strategy, the biggest thing with strategy is that it merges information that you know about your business with what we know about advertising.
Yeah.
And it's a navigation plan to help you make decisions along the way so you get to the business growth that you're looking for. Then you need the three C's: communication, context, and consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Every relationship, you need those things. Yeah. Communication, you need to be available to talk, collaborate, share ideas. Context, data for the sake of data, not that interesting. Data for the sake of insights, very important. Yeah. So contextualizing a campaign, what's working and why is it working? Something's not working. Why isn't it working? How do we change? How do we improve? And then the consistency part is day in and day out. You know, we're there for you. We've got your back. So that's the reason clients stay with us, because of those elements.
You know, that reminds me of something a mentor once taught me, and I've never forgotten it. He said, you have to autopsy success just like you autopsy failure.
100%.
Because if you don't know why it's working when it's working, you won't know how to fix it when it breaks.
100%. That's great.
Never forgotten that. That what you just said reminded me of that, the importance of that, how critical that is. I want to come back to something you said a few minutes ago, that, you know, you're not the same leader you were in 2018.
Yeah.
And neither am I. You know, I think growth is part of that, the intentionality with which we pursue growth. But I'm curious, you know, a year from now, 5 years from now, Brill is going to need you to lead at a higher level than you are where you are today.
Yeah.
What do you do personally to level up? What do you do to stay on top of your game and level up with the leadership skills that you're going to need to be the leader Brill needs you to be?
Yeah. I mean, the commonality, you know, when I started this business in 2013, I was like, okay, I need a business that's going to give me a salary that I want, and I want to stay in advertising, right? Those were the two things that I figured out. I'll never be able to have had a really great job prior to that. I'll never be able to have that kind of like interesting job again. So I got to create it for myself, for better or for worse.
Mm-hmm.
And that ethos still remains as a personal driver. Like, I would have never been a CEO of, it's unlikely that I would have been a CEO of a company had I not created Brill Media, right? So I didn't have the chops, but I mean, arguably now I do, or theoretically I do. Who knows? Who knows if I actually do, but for better or for worse, it's going well at Brill Media with me as the leader of the company.
Yeah.
But my personal work motivation is a combination of bigger responsibility, changing responsibility. That's the other part. An understanding that I need change. There was a time in 2010. There was a time in 2010 when I said, I'm never writing a media plan again. Like, I'm done with media plans. I remember we were working on the Phillips 66 business. So this was when they were a Fortune 4 company at the time.
Yeah.
And my dad had just passed away.
Oh.
And yeah, it was a tough time. It was actually, I believe it was December 1st of 2010. Mm. And around that time, I don't necessarily know if it was precipitated by my dad passing away, but I was like, I'm done writing media plans. Like, I've done this for 6-7 years now. I'm cool. Now, did I write a bunch of media plans for my business? Yes, but they're more like proposals. Media plans at that time was a ton of research, look at Comscore data. What's the composition of your audience, all that stuff. And now that doesn't matter in a big way because you're targeting audience with data, right? So wherever your audience is, we can find them. Like, composition of audience on a site is only relevant for like Diageo, where they have to, or Bacardi, where they have to achieve, 72% or higher composition of people over 21. So they don't market to kids, that type of thing. Yeah. So in that really robust, dramatic way, I was like, I'm never writing a media plan again. And so for me, it's about keeping things fresh and interesting. Like, I hired like an SEO mentor. Yeah. So I'm learning SEO, which I think is interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, I want to learn how to do it. And number two, I want to actually not spend tens of thousands of dollars paying someone else to do it. I want to do it myself because I know my business the best and I can actually see things that they won't see. Yeah. Now, and to be fair, there are plenty of experts out there who could do it better than me, but it's a double win. I learn how to do something, so I'm more knowledgeable about our business and I'm not expending the money. So like continuous creation of marketing, like learning, being a practitioner and a student of marketing is really important for me. Like, I wrote a chat agent copywriting over the weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know how good it is, but we're going to test it out and see if it works. Like, that's interesting to me. And then also the professional responsibilities. Like, when you look at Elon Musk spent billions of dollars buying Twitter.
Yeah.
Now, granted, billions of dollars buying Twitter, I'm never going to spend billions of dollars doing anything. Right. Unlikely. But it's a big risk for him. So the dollar amount doesn't matter. What matters is the magnitude of that risk. Mm-hmm. And so whether I'm spending whatever money any entrepreneur is spending, the risk like index is still there. Whether you're spending $10 or $100 or $100,000 or $1 billion, it could still be very risky to someone, or it could be very non-risky to someone. Mm-hmm. And so I want to grow that risk level. And I want to also feel more comfortable taking bigger risks. That's a professional sort of thing for me. Yeah. And, I think becoming more aligned with what I actually want this business to do, like being an entrepreneur is different things for different people. Like, people want financial freedom. They want power and responsibility. They want public acknowledgement. They want to be perceived as a leader. They want to have headcount. They want to have revenue. So for me, I'm really becoming much more attuned to what being an entrepreneur means to me. And it's relatively limited goals. Mm. My goals are, I want to just keep working in advertising and not have to worry about money. Yeah. Like, I don't need a massive headcount. It's not bad to have a massive headcount, but do I want to, it's like, there's a lifestyle shift. I have a 5-year-old and a wife. Like, I really want to spend time with my 5-year-old and my wife. Like, they're good people. I love them.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, it works. So it's like, do I want bigger headcount or do I want more time with my wife and my child? I want more time with my wife and my child.
Yeah.
So it's crafting, it's the constant refinement and crafting of that life that I want to live. And having the professional responsibilities change and adapt and continue to work in marketing. Because I love marketing.
Mm. So often people, as we get older, we begin to think about legacy. And I'm curious, have you given any thought to that, to what you want your legacy to be?
No, unfortunately, I think in increments of days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes hours. Not really hours. Usually days. Increments of days and like weeks. Legacy. No. Legacy for me is is how my child thinks of me. That's it.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, that's all it is. It's not like, you know, it's day to day. I want to be there for my child and ensure that he has a good start in life.
I love that. And mine is my thought process around this is similar. You know, I want those who know me best, those closest to me, my wife and my daughters, I want them to respect me most, to think most of me. People who don't know me that well, their opinion means something, but right. not nearly as much as those closest to us. And I think so often leaders can fall into the trap of caring more about what those acquaintances think or yeah. the distant audience thinks than what those closest to you think.
I have a core group of friends. You know, it's interesting is they're all doing big things. My best friend is doing editing, like longtime friends doing podcasting and becoming a bigwig in the podcasting space.
Nice.
Other people doing, you know, family things. And I think what's actually interesting for me is I want them to see the true me. Like if I fail, I fail.
Right.
I'm okay with that. I want them to know who I am rather than to think something of me that's like artificial and maybe manicured, you know, like yeah. not real.
Is there a book that has made a big difference in your journey? Something that you would recommend that every leader listening add to their to read list?
There's a few. Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell.
Love Gladwell. Yeah.
That's one. I really like there's a communication anecdote in there. I think it's in Outliers about the plane crash in San Francisco airport where the pilots, the co-pilot saw something, the main pilot, the captain didn't see something. And because of cultural nuances, the co-pilot didn't press the issue and the plane crashed in San Francisco, which is horrible.
Yeah.
But it's like something so small as communication style and cultural kind of nuances create this really massive problem. So I think about that a lot when there's, you know, communication things that could have been avoided, self-inflicted yeah. wounds that could have been avoided.
Yeah.
And then Robert Cialdini, Persuasion and Presuasion.
Oh, so good.
Important books.
Yeah.
You know, this idea of, you know, people will, if you give people something, they will feel indebted to you and they will feel indebted to give you something back, mm-hmm. Which can be used on a person to person perspective, you know, level. It's often in tourist trap locations where people will give something to the tourists and then expect money in exchange or something, you know, but mm-hmm. like, it's not really set what's happening and the tourist just gets taken advantage of. So that's interesting to me, but also like, you know, in business, giving, I don't know. Like, I think having a long-term view, and that leads me to these ideas of having, you know, I was fascinated when I had like worked 2 years at Universal McCann. Like, wow, it's like time flies, 2 years, I'm getting some traction in the business I really enjoy doing, all that stuff. You know, 6 years into it, holy cow, I think I was a director at the time, or 7 years into it, I was a director. You know, 10 years, vice president, like, holy cow. Like up until that point, you know, I basically graduated in college. I think I was 23 years old. I was on the 5-year plan.
Nuts.
I got 25% more college, so better value.
That's right.
But like everything seemed so, it's like long plots of time seemed so hard to accomplish because everything was happening like 3 to 6 month increments, that doing something for 2 years blew my mind. Doing something for 10 years blew my mind. Yeah. 20 years, holy freaking cow, like this is incredible. There's a moment in time where I realized, you know, when you have long-term thinking, it's incredibly valuable. Like my first job, I was making a pittance which was great. I loved my first job at University of McCann, but you know, I was out of college. You know, how much value could I possibly provide? I didn't really even understand the business at that point.
Yeah.
And I saw colleagues of mine making moves for money. And I was like, I don't know. I think it's better for me to not make money now to make five times as much money later. Yeah. And it worked.
Yeah.
But I made mistakes along the way. I can't say I was, you know, that discipline, because I did make a move for money and I didn't like the job and et cetera. But it's okay. It was a learning experience. It was good. But having long-term view, and that's one of the challenges of my job. Like, I have a general in the back of my head, long-term view, but I also, it's hard with all the day-to-day things that are happening to actually, like, I'm focused on getting this client deliverable out in the next 2 hours. Not that I'm doing that for most of my clients, but for some of the, you know, things that are just getting off the ground, I'm paying attention to that. It's like, okay, I can't have a 5-year plan or a 1-year plan when I need this freaking document to be reread and sent out.
Robert, this has been so packed with value. I can't thank you enough for sharing so generously and openly about your journey so far. Congratulations on 10 years of Brill Media.
Thank you.
A fantastic accomplishment. And based on what I've heard in our conversations, I believe the best is yet to come.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
I know our listeners are going to want to stay connected to you and continue to learn from you. What is the best way for them to do that?
Yeah. Go to brillmedia.co. That's B as in boy, R-I-L-L, media.co. There's a contact us form, and you'll be prompted to fill out your information, and then you get an email to set a time on my calendar. We can talk about anything, including your marketing strategy, if you just want to connect or commiserate. Good with that too.
Outstanding. Robert, thank you again.
Thanks, William. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me for this episode today. As we wrap up, I'd love for you to do two things. First, subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. And if you find value here, I'd love it if you would rate it and review it. That really does make a difference in helping other people to discover this podcast. Second, if you don't have a copy of my newest book, Catalytic Leadership, I'd love to put a copy in your hands. If you go to catalyticleadershipbook.com, you can get a copy for free. Just pay the shipping so I can get it to you, and we'll get one right out. My goal is to put this into the hands of as many leaders as possible. This book captures principles that I've learned in 20 plus years of coaching leaders in the entrepreneurial space, in business, government, nonprofits, education, and the local church. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to keep up with what I'm currently learning and thinking about. And if you're ready to take a next step with a coach to help you intentionally grow and thrive as a leader, I'd be honored to help you. Just go to catalyticleadership.net to book a call with me. Stay tuned for our next episode next week. Until then, as always, leaders, choose to be catalytic.
Thanks for listening to Catalytic Leadership with Dr. William Attaway. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss the next episode. Want more? Go to catalyticleadership.net.